Liebe Fans, hier ist Mario Theissen. Ich wünsche euch viel Spaß mit F1 Weekly und natürlich mit der ganzen Formel 1 Saison.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula 1. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you are not one of them.
No, you want to. Keep up the good work, Steven, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. Qualifying, Steve. Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 398, December 17th, 2009. Stephen?
This F1Weekly podcast is brought to you by Marin Karting, the premier sponsor of the Northern California Jim Russell Rotax Challenge. Check them out, you know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen, and of course, we love our friends at Marin Karting. On today's program, Renault is staying in Formula One. Richard Branson likes to wear dresses. And we're still waiting for that Schumacher decision, which I think has been made, but we can't go out on a limb. But I have gone out on a limb. Schumacher will be driving in Formula One for the 2010 season. And, of course, Motorsports Mondial with the guru himself, Mr. Nasser Hamid. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wonderful, Mr. Rogers. And yourself?
Oh, I'm just wonderful. The Christmas trees, the scent of pine in the air.
Thank goodness we don't have any snow on the ground.
You're not kidding. Thank goodness for that. We don't have any snow. We have the luxury of we can drive to the snow, but we don't let it interrupt our lives.
Exactly.
So, no, it's wonderful. Good news, of course, today with Renault
basically making the announcement that, well, they are not leaving Formula One.
Exactly. Genie, I'm not even sure how to pronounce it. Genie Capital.
It's probably just Jenny.
Genie Capital has purchased a share of Renault. They'll have a lot of say in some of the decisions, but all I care about is Renault is on the grid.
Well, maybe that Genie will help them drag in more sponsorship, and you know, maybe they can work that into the formula and not necessarily, you know, kind of be the silent partner, the money bag.
Exactly, and I don't have any problems with that. I think it's going to be good if it helps the team stay on the grid. Williams sold some shares last month.
Braun GP basically sold out to Mercedes.
Yes, I mean, this is the way it is. Money is hard to find, and when you can find it, you go for it.
Exactly.
So good for Renault, and also Renault will be supplying Red Bull. It's official. It's done.
So when the Red Bull wins, Clark wins.
When Renault wins and Red Bull wins, Clark wins for sure. But hopefully it's going to be a great season, and I'm looking forward to it. I think this influx of cash and maybe invigorate the team,
yeah,
which they were looking for with Fernando, but unfortunately the car was a pig. And now maybe they're going to come up. Why don't you just copy Adrian Newey's design from last year as a start?
Yeah, exactly. Just kind of use that as your baseline. The problem is how well would that, you know, you don't know how well that particular line will work with the heavy car.
Well, the heavy car is just going to be, I mean, obviously they have to accommodate for much more fuel, but still aerodynamically, Adrian Newey's design was so much more superior than Renault's design.
Just about anybody's. You could have started with the Braun, you know.
And Braun has announced that their car for 2010 will look very similar and have many characteristics of the Red Bull car. So a lot of people saw the Red Bull car as really probably one of the best design cars on the grid.
Well, that was, I think, the one car that was consistently fast all season. It came out of the gate quick, even though it didn't have the double diffuser, and maintained pace throughout the season with, you know, what really amounted to no really, you know, truly major changes into the aero.
I agree. So I think this is great. We have a complete grid. Of course, there's still some drivers to be named. And one of them now, Kubica, wants details of what's going on at Renault, even though they will be on the grid. He signed a contract to drive for Renault. But his manager was babbling about, well, you know, we want to know what Genie is involved in. What are they going to be deciding? So I think they're just trying to be difficult, but I certainly hope Robert Kubica stays with Renault. I mean, he hasn't even gotten in the car yet.
I don't think he has, since Renault didn't pull out and sell off the team in whole, I don't think he has an out.
Yeah.
Unless there's some sub-clause in his contract that says that if Genie makes Polish sausage, then he can bail.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, contracts are made to be broken. There's always a way to get out of them.
Yeah, if Robert really wants out, he probably just needs to walk into the team principal's office and go, I want out.
Right,
you
exactly.
You don't want a driver that doesn't want to be there.
Well, if the Schumacher rumors weren't swirling around, Robert Kubica would be a shoe-in at Mercedes GP.
Yeah.
Alongside Nico. I mean, it would be great. Also, Nick Heidfeld, who seems to be left out. I mean, now we've got Timo Glock and Jarno Trulli.
Signed.
Yep.
We got Heike. Got himself a seat. I was really surprised to see.
Heike Kovalainen, yes. I thought that was great. He'll be at Lotus with Jarno Trulli.
Mm-hmm.
And Timo Glock is paired
with Degrassi.
With, Degrassi, that should be interesting.
One starts to wonder who, Kobayashi was linked to, was it Manor, to Virgin?
Sauber.
Sauber, that was it.
Possible test with Sauber, but they didn't test him during our moment in Jerez, but I certainly hope Kobayashi gets a seat. He deserves it.
The way he raced those last two races, he definitely deserves a chance.
Exactly.
And then, you know, Renault's got the open seat, and USF1 has been notoriously silent.
Why don't we just mock USF1 right off the top, since we're the only fairly successful American podcast? It's our duty. Okay, everybody's crash testing, naming drivers, naming, I mean, now Virgin has taken over Manor.
They have rumors about drivers, which USF1 doesn't even have rumors about drivers.
They have this one Argentinian guy who's supposed to fork over $8 million for the bus ride. USF1 is really disappointing everyone.
Yeah, I expected them to be at least in the news.
You go to Lotus F1, they've got their new logo, they've got press releases, pictures of the staff. It's very nice. It's informative. I really don't know what's going on with this American team. Now, I know, you know, they're in the Carolinas and things are a little slower out there.
And it's kind of falling off the face of the planet. It's like, they do have internet, don't they?
Well, not only that, it's December. We're further than halfway through December, and we have not seen nothing from USF1.
Yeah, and no news from USF1 one way or the other. That anything's moving on, you know, that they're packing up boxes to ship them to the FIA test plant.
Out in Albuquerque?
Is that where it is?
No, it's not, but it sounded good. No, I found it all very interesting, and it's very disappointing because we were disappointed from the first day all this was announced, but we'll see if USF1 will be on the grid or not. I honestly don't believe it will.
The way they're going right now, I'm really would be kind of surprised for them to show up.
And they probably should have bought the Toyota chassis just to get a leg up.
Yeah, really, just get them out.
Toyota had the car designed.
Come on, their website isn't even up.
USF1.com?
Come on, they've got a splash page.
Well, that's the way it is, Stephen.
They've got a pretty blue semi Formula One chassis on there, but
yep, it's. But we'll see what happens. Let's hope that we are proven wrong. Anyway, Formula One teams will be allowed to give mid-season substitute drivers a day of testing in 2010. Isn't that generous? You get one day of testing.
Yeah, it's kind of like...
Why don't they just open it up a little bit? I don't think...
Ultimately, you know, I think the idea, you know, Bernie's idea of doing it on Monday I thought was pretty lame. But open up Thursday. You know, open up a four-hour block on Thursday... For testing at every, you know, at each race.
And any
or
driver.
Or at selected races that anyone can get in the car.
Test, exactly. Not just the test drivers, but the current drivers. I mean, it wouldn't raise the cost of Formula One anymore.
You know, they're already going to be in town. If they, you know, want to come in a day early, great, fine. You know, you're talking about fuel and tire costs. And, you know, maybe a couple of more motors over the course of the season. But ultimately, I think it will make for a better spectacle. It will make for better cars. It will make for better and safer drivers because you can get your backup driver some laps so he knows what the car feels like. So you don't have situations like we saw last year where you get some poor guy, you know, take Force India when Giancarlo pulls out and Vitantonio gets into the car and he's kind of going, ooh, Formula One car. Been a while since I've been here.
You know, no, I agree. I still understand, but at least it's a start. They're going to get one day, and it says, if a team declares that one of its current race drivers is to be substituted by a driver who has not participated in an F1 race in the two previous calendar years, one day of track testing will be permitted between the start of the week preceding second event and the last event of the championship. So there you go.
At least they get that poor kid on track.
Which is critical, I think, for safety reasons and everything else. I mean, he should be able to practice pit stops and really be prepared to race.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, frankly, so the team can find out whether or not he's qualified.
Exactly. So, I don't know. I think there's a lot of issues to deal with there. And I think FOTA should bring this up with the FIA and FOM and get it straightened out.
Yeah, there needs to be something more, you know, ultimately you change up testing. Maybe you allow, you know, 5 days of testing during the season and it can't be one of your two drivers that drives the test. It's got to be your backup or a named driver, you know, your fourth driver that does the testing so that you basically have a stable of drivers behind your two primaries to make sure that if one of them is injured, becomes ill, you know, is arrested for a DUI in Vermont, they can, you know, jump in and take over the car.
Keep up the good work, Stephen. So we'll see what happens there. Felipe Massa, he went and tested the 2007 Ferrari, the two-year-old car, apparently at Mugello. Of course, this was one of the cars from the collection... Vintages.
Yeah, the cars that Ferrari supposedly doesn't own. But
they don't own them. They're from the clienti.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
But he said he was very quick immediately and nothing seems to have changed in his driving style compared to before the accident. So still testing the waters there for Felipe Massa. And he's got to. And I think at least he was able to do that. I'm sure it was fun. Of course, they were on some kind of neutral tire compound.
That's probably not even a Bridgestone.
No, I'm sure it wasn't. I would probably assume it was an Avon.
It may have been a Ferrari Buzz Light Pirelli, so maybe it was a...
I don't know. Or it could have been a GP2 tire. They called it... I can't quite remember, but it's some kind of neutral tire for exhibition and show. So there you have it. But... And that's what they should do for the testing.
Yeah, well, ultimately for Felipe, just a kind of test for Ferrari to make sure that he's going to be capable to get in the car when the season starts, because they really need to, you know, line somebody up now if there's any question marks as to his viability
not
in
only
the car
that,
next season.
But okay, let's say Schumacher is signed for sure. I mean, the last F1 car he drove was this F2007.
Yeah.
So, I you know, there's a 3-year gap between the F2007 and the Mercedes GP 2010 car. Should be very interesting, but well, Schumacher is going to be a fast learner.
That the other thing about. Too that's changed, you know, Schumacher, he's going to be driving a full fueled car. He has never done that, so that should be interesting. Tires, the double compounds, was he involved? No, he's not had to deal with the two compounds.
No,
so that's another twist that he's going to have to deal with. But you know, he is Michael Schumacher. He, you know, arguably the best Formula One driver in history. Though a lot of that had to do with his team. But, you know, he's got the talent. He's got, you know, he's always been a little bit more cerebral as a driver than most. I don't think anything's going to really phase him if he does come back.
No, and most people say he'll be a contender.
He'll be competitive with his teammate. Whether or not his car's competitive, that's the real question.
That's true. We'll see what happens. It could be Renault right up front, huh?
Yeah, well, it could be, you know, you could have the classic, you know, sophomore jinx for Braun GP. You know, the second year in the sport, they came out of the gate really hard, yep, looking really good, had a car that they were able to put a whole lot of time into.
Yep.
And, you know, this year, they, from what Ross was saying, they didn't sacrifice, I think he said they sacrificed 1 week or something like that towards the 2010 car to keep the two, to try to maintain their lead with the 2209. So, who knows? I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun. We're going to have a lot more cars in the grid, you know.
26 cars, Steven.
And who, you know, maybe one of the new teams coming in is going to be the next Braun GP who's going to come out of the gate, you know,
well,
hands on fire.
I think McLaren and Ferrari are going to be strong again this year, especially if McLaren keeps the momentum that they got at the end of the 2009 season. Certainly they'll be contenders for sure. Red Bull, we know, will be definitely up there. And whether that some of these new teams could perform well, I'll be surprised. But
you never know. You know, maybe they've got a designer who finds that little that tweak that makes their car better.
I agree.
You know, think about the way the Braun exploited the vagaries of the regulations to go with the double diffuser. You know, who knows? Maybe they find that same, you know, kind of deal.
Well, there's some pretty weird stuff going on, of course, between Lotus chief Tony Fernandez and Virgin Racing, Richard Branson. Apparently, Richard Fernandez has accepted Branson's challenge that whoever's Formula One team finishes lowest next season should act as a stewardess on one of the winners' flights.
Okay.
I hope the tickets are cheap on that.
They're gonna be stewardesses or stewards?
No, he will be wearing a dress,
the female,
as a stewardess.
The female uniform?
Yes.
I'll bet you most of the women on both of those airlines don't wear skirts.
Well, one of these, and this is one of Richard Branson's.
It's one of Richard Branson's publicity stunts.
It could be, or it's just something that he fantasizes about and it just slipped.
Yeah, true. Well, knowing Richard, you know, he probably, if he wants to do it, he does it.
Hey, sure, he can afford to.
You never know. You might be taking one of those, you know, short hops across England and go, damn, that stewardess is ugly.
Not only that, but he's probably wearing, you know, nice Coco Chanel outfits.
Oh, I'm sure he's wearing top of the line, you know, custom tailored.
So everybody's pretty happy over there at Lotus. And, of course,
Virgin Racing.
I was going to say Virgin Atlantic. But Virgin Racing, and I'm glad they've all got their act together. It's great stuff. We'll see what happens. But I'm looking forward to these teams. I certainly hope Sauber gets their act together, but I'm sure they're going to have a great team together.
Yeah, Sauber I'm not so worried about because, you know, they're basically going to be able to leverage the 2009 BMW, which wasn't great but wasn't absolutely horrible. It was, you know, really a solid middle-of-the-pack car. I think a lot of teams last year, especially in the top tier in the manufacturers, really got hosed by the whole KERS grail.
Okay, let's hope this doesn't happen in 2010. But with the KERS and the diffuser, those things sort of threw things into a weird spin at the beginning of 2009. So let's hope the rules are clear and everybody has the fill nozzle on the right side of the car.
Well, doesn't matter what side of the fill nozzle's on, dude. Because
that's right.
You fill the car at the start.
I forgot. Yes. God, what was I thinking? Yes. No more.
I'm waiting to see the. We should start a pool as to which team is going to be the first one to run out of gas.
I think. Well, that's going to be a tough one. Most with today's technology, I can't believe anybody will be running out of gas.
Somebody will do it.
You think?
Somebody did screw up the
maybe
numbers.
USF1. They ran out of gas already. Exactly.
Really, they may already be out of gas.
So there you have it. But no, it's going to be exciting. I can't wait for the season to start. I know it's December. We have months to go. I believe we have like 90 days.
Yeah, but we're supposed to get a major launch of cars in mid-January, so that should be fun.
Yes, and they were talking about a massive launch.
Yeah, we're at least
everybody
getting a lot
in Valencia.
Of, yeah, get everybody there.
Well, I don't know. I don't want everything at once. That's just too much data. Yeah. I like it when one comes out, and then the next week another one comes out, and you could just absorb it and look at the pictures and the little idiosyncrasies.
Flashback to the one that came out the week before.
And you got the before. Ooh, and
wow,
the
look at that difference in the nose. What are they trying to do there?
As we do every year.
Yep.
So, no, it's going to be exciting. I can't wait. And hopefully NASA might have some information on USF1 with some of its inside sources. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with Motorsports Mondial and some outstanding news from around the globe. We'll be back after this brief message.
Are you between the ages of 8 and 80 and want to experience the thrill of wheel-to-wheel racing for yourself? Do you want a hobby that you, your family, or group of friends can share? The Jim Russell Northern California Road Tax Challenge Series, sponsored in part by Marin Karting, is the fast-growing Northern California series of the Road Tax Max Challenge USA and can lead to an FIA-approved world championship. Road Tax answers your dream of racing. With a reliable engine that's sealed, keeps carts on the same level playing field, your operating costs low, your fun level high, and your skill determining your success. Be your own number one driver as part of the Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series. Race on to NorCalRotex.com to learn more. And see MarinKarting.com for Rotex engines, parts, and accessories.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And before I spin the globe, I just want to remind the listeners to stay tuned later on in the program for the latest in the Alexander Rossi interview saga. Of course, he tested the Formula One car, and we've got it right here on F1Weekly.com. So now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the man who needs no introduction, Nasser Hamid.
Greetings and racing regards from Asbury Park to Albert Park, and we cannot wait for the season opener, even though I don't think it's in Albert Park, it's in Bahrain this year. Am I right, sir?
Probably.
Okay, but we'll go back to Albert Park. And we also wish all our listeners around the world happy holidays after mail and rebate. Everybody has got that mail and rebate going on these days. How is the Duke of Dijon?
The Duke of Dijon is happy. Renault is staying in Formula One, and there's nothing else to say.
And the Shark Swami with an open wine. How are you, sir?
Doing great, Mr. Nasser. How about yourself?
I'm doing very good, sir. Thank you. Mr. Rogers, talking of Renault staying in Formula One, I read somewhere, I think it was on James Allen's blog or somebody else's blog, fairly reliable source, that this deal is brokered by Bernie Ecclestone. He's involved in all major, he was involved in the ING to Renault deal, and that he was pretty much, requiring that Renault at least keep the name for one season for whatever reason. But having sold off a major shareholding, I don't think the company will be involved after 2010.
We shall see, Nasser. One day at a time.
One day at a time. San Ando.
One season at a time. They're in next year. That makes Clark happy. He won't worry about it again until October.
Exactly.
That's good. Okay, also in the news is this was bizarre. I mean, I've heard stuff like this before, but not associated with big-name companies. Braun Grand Prix, soon to be or basically now Mercedes Grand Prix, signs a multi-million dollar sponsorship agreement. I'm sure you read about this,
oh,
right?
Oh, yes.
Multi-million dollar sponsorship agreement with a German company, only to find out the man did not have the company's express written consent to do business on their behalf. So you have to have express written consent.
Usually, but you know, these days money is so hard to get that the suggestion of money, people just jump.
Yeah. Company in question is Henkel, previously seen on Mercedes, McLaren Mercedes, I should say. They are like the Procter & Gamble of Germany. Not sure if they make Das Pampers for the new arrivals in Deutschland, Uber alles. And this was not a $1 million, $2 million deal. This was like a deal in excess for $70, $80 million spread over 3 years. And now lawyers will be busy from both sides. But I read an interesting statement from the company saying that the team should have done due diligence and find out if the guy has even authority to act on behalf of... I've heard a lot of stories like this, but not involving a deal to the extent where an agreement has been signed and stuff like that.
Did he get wined and dined by the team?
Oh, of course. Yeah, wined and dined, and you might see jail time now as per the Henkel Corporation. So we'll keep an eye on this. Now, banking on F1, LDC, private equity arm of Lloyds Bank. Now, these banks all over the world are in such financial mess. And here is this division of Lloyds Bank taking a stake in Maynard Formula One team, reported to be over $15 million, which is very, very loose change for Lloyds Bank and or for Clark Rogers, for that matter.
Well, a lot of banks seem to be getting back on their feet. I know that several of the American banks have managed to pay back their United States government loans in quick haste so that their CEOs and other executives can gouge the company for their huge paychecks.
Of course. The bank, after the bailout by the British government, is 43% owned by taxpayers. So it's nice to know some of our F1 Weekly familiar members are now part F1 team owners, like Mr. Brazier and Dr. Farrington. When the season starts, Maynard will be taking off as Virgin F1. And there is no shortage of money there. Timo Glock is the lead driver, of course, and grass is finally greener for Lucas Di Grassi as he gets the second seat, which I'm happy for both these guys. I think these are both pretty decent drivers. Good place to start. They're not in the shadow of some superstar or stuff like that. And let's see how far they go. Any thoughts on their driver lineup, sir?
I thought it was an interesting lineup. Timo Glock has obviously proven himself with Toyota having some excellent drives during the 2009 season. Degrassi, we shall see. But he's fairly talented, and this could be a good lineup.
Yeah, when Timo Glock won the GP2 championship some years ago, he finished, I think, second. And one driver I would like to really see get a chance is, I'm surprised his name has not been mentioned more, is Adam Carroll. He, you know, won the A1 GP championship for Team Ireland. He really made Antonio Fisoni look bad in GP2 car when he was let go, and he got in and won a race or two very quickly. And I think he's a pretty good driver, so I would like to see him at least get some luck of the Irish and a seat two in Formula One. Lotus Formula One team, the original team featured. Now this is very, very interesting. It's such a huge name in the annals of motor racing history. The original team featured names like Colin Chapman, Peter Wright, and Peter Waugh, and drivers like Jim Clark, Mario Andretti, Emerson Fittipaldi, Ayrton Senna, Nelson Piquet, the senior that is. The new team, now based out of Kuala Lumpur instead of Caterham Hall, will feature names like Mike, I commute by plane Gascoigne, Tony Fernandez, and Alex Jung. Drivers' duties will be ably performed by two one-hit wonders. Senor Jarno Trulli was a karting world champion and also won the 1996 German F3 championship. but looked like a complete idiot at the Brazilian Grand Prix when he was doing chop-chop with Adrian Sutil. He previously worked with Mike Gascoigne when he was Tutti Frutti Flavor of the Week with Flavio at Renault. But the magic of Monaco 2004 never returned. I remember this race very well.
Me too.
And I thought he might win a race or two still. But
But still, at least he's got a Grand Prix win. Nick Heidfeld doesn't.
Which might be the reason why Nick is still looking for a job.
And Yarno Trulli and Heikki Kovalainen both have, Grand Prix wins. This is a pretty good team up for a new upcoming team.
Yes, and there's a lot of money behind it. Malaysian government is behind it. And Mike Gascoigne, as Flavio said, as soon as he left, we started winning. But he's a pretty, talented guy. And I think
is he going to be commuting to Kuala Lumpur?
No, I don't think so. I think they're going to make the car in England and then maybe ship it in to Kuala Lumpur. But let's see how far it goes. Talking of Heikki Kovalainen, Kovi was a winner in World Series by Renault and second in GP2. Main claim to fame is beating Michael Schumacher in Race of Champions in days gone by. And that glory has not yet returned back for him. Hungry for more Grand Prix success since his 2008 Budapest blessings. After that, teammate Hamilton took him for a ride on Boulevard of Broken Dreams. A road well traveled when your teammates have last names like Schumacher, Senna, Fittipaldi, Stewart, and Clark, as in Jim. So, any thoughts on the new Lotus team, sir?
No. I think at least they look pretty good. Their website looks pretty good. They named drivers. The car is coming along. They've done some crash testing of components. Much better than USF1 so far.
So it's not a phantom operation.
No phantom operations.
Yeah, talking of the USF1, Peter Windsor was referring quite a bit to the skunkworks. It pretty soon may even smell like skunkworks. Nothing is coming out. I mean, December practically is all over now. Where is the $10 million from American Jose Maria Lopez?
I don't know what's going on over there. And they talked about the young man who founded YouTube, a billionaire. There should have been plenty of funds to get everything up and running. So much talk about this wind tunnel that they have in Charlotte. But yet, nothing.
Now you tell me what, you're in that league. What is $20 million for a billionaire?
It's chicken change. That's what they spend at KFC.
Just annual household expenses.
Yeah, that just pays for the electricity to heat the spa.
There we go. Spa, right. Not spa Francorchamps.
Exactly.
Okay, and talking of Lotus, we have a very good interview conversation coming up with Clive Chapman, son of Colin Chapman, and Mr. Bob Dance, who was a mechanic and crew chief to people like Fittipaldi and Clark.
And that's going to be the weekend.
Yeah,
special edition this weekend. Podcast.
It's a very good conversation. I was so pleased to be there, and thank you, Mr. Brazier, for his Lexus limo service. Absolutely, man. Hethel, Norfolk, unbelievable. Anyway, going back to Lotus one more time, the new Lotus team, local, yokel. It's like saying everybody wants to go to heaven, nobody wants to die. Everybody wants to go to Formula One, and I can understand that. But you got to pay your dues. You got to say, hey, I did this, so I deserve a seat. I can understand if Grassi says that or Giorgio Pantano. Now, check this out. And we don't have anything against the driver because he's from another place or whatever. It's performance driven. A local yokel, Feroz Fawzi, will be team's third driver. He was second in this year's World Series by Renault, which championship was won by Bertrand Baguette. And how tasty can that series get? You know what I'm saying? When Baguette is winning. Yeah, thank you. Feroz Fawzi, his previous racing experience shows two seasons in main GP2 series. Listen to this. When I read this, I had an inkling this was the case, but I try to do a fact check as much as possible. In 2005, he raced with Dam's team and did not score any points in 23 races, which is a damn shame. Okay? In the following season, 2006, he was in GP2 again with Supernova, the British-based team. Again, not a single point, this time from 21 races, which is really supernova in Spanish, meaning super no go. Now, do you think this profile, two seasons, not even a point, a driver, regardless of his name and whatever, you think this is for Formula One?
It's shocking, actually.
Yeah, I'm amazed. Well,
I mean, each team is entitled to do what they're.
Yeah, they everybody.
Want to do. He's got UJEDA written all over him.
But it's pretty frightening.
Yeah. Yeah, and I must say that he did win one GP2 Asia race some years back, or about a year ago. But I mean, you know, it's
how much money has he got behind him?
Well, he's from Malaysia, so the government and you know, petrol, whatever. And, he's on the tire. Yeah, yeah. Okay, more GP2 news. No go for Durango. The Italian team will not be on the grid in 2010. Lack of leaders is the reason, and as we all know, money makes the world, and racing cars go around. Okay, and looks like most of the seats are filled in GP2 except for one or two. So we should have a confirmation soon as to what the lineup is. Most of the teams, we ought to know who it will be. World Rally Championship, Mr. Marcus Grönholm, who retired after the, he wants to do a Shumi type deal, who retired after the 2007 season, will take part in Rally Sweden next year in a Ford Focus. The Finnish driver has won this event 5 times in the past. So we wish him well. Now we come to Liar, Liar, Pants on Fire. Can you say that?
I can.
Say that in your broadcast voice.
Oh, no.
Don't be shy now.
No.
Okay, in an exclusive piece in the Sunday Telegraph newspaper, which you can read on www.telegraph.co.uk, Max Mosley, remember him?
Vaguely.
Yeah. He is quoted as saying about Flavio, and I quote, "What he's saying is that he was not given a proper trial, but he declined to turn up and declined to appeal. The fact is, he knew damn well he was guilty. And so he goes to a French court, makes all sorts of allegations, and tries to distract everybody's attention." End of quote. It must be said, when it comes to hot pants, Max is quite an authority, and when he lashes out, people obey.
Yeah. Oh, my favorite Mosley quote of the past week was, "Oh, I could have kept Toyota and BMW in the sport."
Well, him and Bernie can do anything. But, you know, it's easy to say these things after the fact.
Yeah, but I prefer to keep my pants on.
Okay. Okay, in the same story that you're referring to, Mr. I believe in the same story, Mr. Fab, Max is claiming that he wanted to ban McLaren team over Spygate but was outvoted. Now, which would be a first if he was outvoted? Basically, you know, Formula One is, when he was there, it was...
He allowed himself to be outvoted, is what basically he's saying.
Yeah. It was... Yeah.
More than likely, he was vetoed by Bernie.
Exactly. And I think when he was in charge, it was whatever him and Bernie wanted would happen. You know, Max used to be Bernie's lawyer when they had this Formula, you know, Foca, whatever it was called. So they are joined at the hip. Now we come to driver deals and wheels for 2010. GP2, Mexican Sergio Perez and Dutchman Guido Vandergaarde will race for Barwa ADAX team. Sam Bird and Jules Bianchi are teammates at ART and hot favorites for the title. I have a feeling that the GP2 championship next season is going to be between Sam Bird and Jules Bianchi. And we'll see what happens. Ocean Racing Technology, owned by Thiago Monteiro, will have 2009 Formula Master Champion Fabio Laimer from Switzerland and 18-year-old Brit Max Chilton as their two drivers. Chilton was fourth in this year's British F3 Championship, which was won by Australian Daniel Ricciardo. Indy Lights, English lady racer Pippa Mann will race in 2010 in Indy Lights with Sam Schmidt, while Charlie Kimball from Southern California will be with AFS Andretti team. Simona Di Silvestro, the 21-year-old Swiss miss, who pulled out a Lewis Hamilton-style defeat from the jaws of victory this year in the final Formula Atlantic race, was testing an IRL car at Sebring last week with Keith Wiggins' team. So it'll be interesting to see what happened, and we wish all these drivers all the best. Jonathan Summerton was in Portimao, Portugal, testing a Formula 2 car. He is hoping to race in Europe next season after losing his phantom seat at USF1 to Jose Maria Lopez. and Lopez himself is looking for another $2 million phantom dollars to buy the ride. There has been nothing from USF on lately, huh?
Nothing. There's nothing on their website, which you...
It's a splash page with an opportunity to contact them.
Right. It's embarrassing. I'm sorry to say. We are supposed to be the pinnacle of technology in this country, and they don't have a functioning website.
They changed the webpage, though. You know,
yeah, nice pretty picture.
Yeah, it's a nice picture. Wonder if Paul-Henri Cahier has been paid for that photo.
Probably.
You know, it's interesting.
I'm guessing the photo that you're seeing isn't even a photo. It's a 3D model.
Oh,
right, it's right off
their computer when these three people, when Steve Matchett disturbed them while they were so busy designing the car.
Designing.
And running their one mil.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe they should call their car F4 Phantom. You know the Phantom fighter plane from the 60s, 70s?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And they used the F1 Phantom.
Yeah, F1 Phantom, and the test car could be the Wild Weasel. They had a Wild Weasel model also. So this, I have a feeling this thing, they won't be on the grid. I have some information from fairly reliable sources, but they have put me on the Belinda Carlisle program. My lips are sealed.
Well, the problem is this is not really rocket science. You have so much time to build a car, crash test components, pass those tests. It's almost physically impossible now for them to do it.
And didn't they have to prove that they had a certain amount of financial resources to even get the slot on the grid?
Well, that's not too hard to do.
Well, I think they have a slot on the grid, but coming up so late in the year, the excuse that no American has a super license, so we're going with somebody else.
Yeah, well, we knew that was going to, you know, the whole driver thing is smokescreen, actually. Where's the car? You know, this is a major American corporation, or it's supposed to be an American corporation, and they have a website that the only thing you can do on it is send them. There isn't some kind of daily blog from someone within the facility, you know, talking about what's happening today. You know, are they even on Twitter?
Mission statement.
A virtual tour of the factory would be interesting.
Even if it was fake.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have the time to check everything that I hear, but I heard from a fairly reliable source that this gentleman, a friend of mine, went to the North Carolina business registry office or whatever, every state has their own thing. And this USF owned corporation is listed, company is listed as a foreign owned. You know, they have the ownership domestic or foreign, so it's listed as foreign owned.
Well, Peter Windsor an American citizen?
No.
So that's why it's probably listed as foreign owned. Well, is his partner an American?
Yeah, Ken Anderson is.
So Peter must be the top of the list, but...
But so much for the hoopla, you know, American this, American that. I'm going to walk around with an American flag. But when it times comes to show my office, I will have a picture of Jim Clark. Gee, what happened to Phil Hill, you know? So it's...
Not only that, but it
pretty bizarre.
It didn't even look like he'd ever spent any time in that office, really. Yeah.
Not only that, but a lot of... you would think that they would have put some thought into all of this, and it seems like they didn't. It's all happened.
No, I think they've put a lot of thought into it, but I think this is just my opinion that this was geared toward, you know, wave the flag and, you know, American corporation will come, oh, we're going to support an American team in Formula One. I mean, you know.
Most American teams are going to support NASCAR teams because
yeah,
it's
exactly.
Domestic. Most American corporations are a little bit... isolationist at this time. They're not really looking to grow internationally.
No, and these companies, American,
you got to go after somebody, you know, AT&T, you know.
But these, you know, AT&T, IBM, UPS, they are such big corporation, over $100 billion plus, that when they have an operation in Europe, that in itself or Asia is a huge, huge operation, a separate entity.
Yeah.
So if you're racing there, they will refer you to the European offices. And... it's just not easy coming up with money.
And
it's not easy.
Most of the American corporations that want to be in F1 are already in F1 with other teams.
You know, the company that has really surprised me too, which, I mean, Formula One, you know, it's expensive, obviously. Pepsi and Coke should really be involved. But then, you know, they're involved in football and other stuff. So Formula One, you know, we think of Formula One as everything because we like Formula One. But, you know, it's not the only place where you can... That's a huge
I think for them, they get better exposure if they're, part of the Barclays Cup or Premier League. Yeah.
World Cup.
Yeah, they're getting a lot more play.
Even in a country like England or Italy, football has more viewership and fans than Formula One.
Of course.
You know, I mean, and look at Brazil.
Yeah. The only thing that you really get with Formula One is overall international exposure. It's probably the biggest international, somewhere on a weekend where a Formula One race is going, you're going to get more viewers around the world than you will in a single place.
Yeah.
But whether that, what's your marketing strategy? Does that benefit your marketing strategy? For an automobile maker, it makes a lot of sense because it's a good investment. But for a lot of other companies, especially soft drink companies, unless you happen to be Red Bull, it may not make as much sense.
Yeah, and when you're talking to a company like Monster or any Starbucks, $30, $40 million, you can hire some well-known American, whether it's a movie star or sports person, for $25 million, you can get more exposure than sponsoring.
Yeah, you pay them $25 million, spend $25 million on television, a lot better deal.
Yeah, Tiger Woods has cut his rates in half.
He's
a bargain.
It's going to be cheap.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen. And thanks, Nasser, for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. Stay tuned for the special and, of course, the latest news, this interview with Alexander Rossi. So we'll be back in 60 seconds.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Nasser, please introduce this wonderful interview, a recent Formula One tester.
Yes, sir. This conversation is with Alexander Rossi. We have spoken to him a few times before, and very happy to say every time we move, he has more updates and more wins and successes to talk about. A young man, 18 years old, from Nevada City, Northern California, north of Sacramento. Very talented, and he has what it takes to go all the way. And this year he was in Formula Master and was Rookie of the Year, had 3 wins, raced in fabulous places like Po, Spa, Imola. And then he did some testing in GP2 car, took part in the inaugural GP2, not the inaugural, but the opening round of the GP2 Asia Series, which was in conjunction with the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. And first time out was in the top 5, very impressive in both races. And he's going to complete the GP2 Asia Series, and he has a very good chance of not being just a rookie, but also definitely finishing in the top 3 overall. That will be very, very impressive and will turn quite a few heads. And he's based in Italy these days. He's, of course, home for the winter holidays. And agenda for next season, he's looking at a couple of series, and I will let listeners listen to what he has to say, what he is looking at. And we definitely wish him all the best. He tested the Formula One BMW car at Jerez as part of winning the Formula BMW World Finals in Mexico City last year. So definitely a young man, very talented, very nice kid, on a fast track. And we wish him all the best. And I told him that whatever series he's doing next year in Europe, Moa will make every effort to go and watch him in action. So Alexander, thank you and keep up the good work.
Okay, folks, on the line with me is Alexander Rossi, and we are all hoping that he will be the next American in Formula One. Alexander, welcome home. You are now living in Italy. So the first question is, come stai, signor?
Yes, thank you for this, and thank you for taking the time out today. This year has been quite different than anything I've experienced before. And like you said, I'm living in Italy now, so that's definitely taken some adjustment, but it's where I need to be in order to continue my European career, so I couldn't be happier.
And how long before you can talk fluently with Luca di Montezemolo in Italian?
Well, quite a while, considering I haven't started yet.
Okay. Well, we want to congratulate you on your success in Formula Master, where you were Rookie of the Year. Congratulations on your two top five results in your GP2 Asia debut. But wait, there's more. Most of all, congratulations on driving BMW Sauber Formula One car. What was the high point for you this season?
Obviously being able to drive the Formula One car was something that I've been wanting to do not only my whole career, but more specifically wanting to do since winning the World Finals in December of last year. So, you know, that it took a while for the prize to come, but when it did, it met all my expectations for sure. But I would have to say that definitely the highlight of the year was being able to go to Abu Dhabi and put in two good results, not only at the Formula One season finale, but also at a track that there was so much that went into it and so much involved in the atmosphere. It was just incredible. So to be able to put in two top five results on my GP2 Asia debut in Abu Dhabi was a fantastic feeling.
Great. Now, you crossed the pond to take part in Formula Master, so we're just going to pick up from there. First question I have, you started with a British team, Hi-Tech, then checked out to a Prague-based team, ISR. Explain why you changed the team. What were their circumstances?
Well, first off, I have to say thank you to Hi-Tech. They are a fantastic team. They're a great group of guys, and really they've succeeded in every series that they've competed in, and you know that's obvious from their past results. But really, the main reason why it didn't work out is because we signed a deal with Hi-Tech very, very late, after about 50% of the preseason testing had already happened. Hi-Tech had never seen the cars before, and they literally got the car a week before our first test. And you know, the entire situation was scrambled, and we really never had time to develop the car because all throughout testing we were working out the bugs of the car and, you know, just trying to get it the reliability to where it needed to be. So when the season, the first two events came around, we just really struggled when competing with second and third year teams. And because the testing bands that are so relevant in open wheel motorsports, you're not allowed to do private testing. So it was in our best interest and really the best interest of Hi-Tech that not only do we part from the team, but they stop competing in the series, because really the fact of the matter was it was going to take a good solid year for them to be able to be competitive.
Okay, fair enough. Streets of Po, you raced in the Pyrenees. This place is very famous for historical nerds, racing history I'm talking about, for nerds like myself. Your impression of the track and the city?
The track is by far my favorite street course, and it's probably on the top of my favorite racetracks all around. It's a joy to drive. Each corner is extremely challenging, and you know, it's different than other street courses because there's a large amount of elevation, and you know, that's very fun to drive, and especially pushing a car to the limit with no room for error up and down hills and over curbs and on sidewalks through roundabouts is pretty cool.
I hear the Mediterranean escargots are very tasty. Did you try those?
No, I'm not a fan of eating crawling creatures, but maybe one day.
Okay. Racing in Europe, you have raced there before, but this was your first full season of competition in Europe. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being best, how would you rate your performance and result in Formula Master this season?
I'd have to say that it was an 8. I mean, obviously, every time that you go into a championship as a team or a driver, you want to win. You want to win the championship. You're not in motorsports to finish second, third, or fourth. But the fact of the matter was, it was my first year in European motorsports, and even though we did have quite a few up and down results, and sometimes the consistency wasn't quite there, there was always true signs that we had pace. And you know, looking back at the field and seeing how many drivers actually came out of there and who are competitive in the highest levels of GP2 is pretty phenomenal. And the fact that I was able to consistently be fighting with them, and now four of us have actually moved up to GP2 or at least GP2 testing. So, and we're all consistently top 5, top 10 in the results. So it definitely showed the strength of Formula Master this year. And, you know, it was a good result for us to come out with Rookie of the Year and to win the final race of the season. Obviously, you, like I said, you're always fighting for the win, but this was a very, very good, you know, consolation prize, if you will.
Sure. Three wins. Which one was the sweetest and why?
I would have to say the season finale in Imola. I was fighting race long with my teammate, and you know, really, it was between the two of us the entire race, and we fought very hard. And you know, it was the final race of the season, and I was able to, you know, just find a hole and exploit it, and I was able to bring home the win. And that was the best, because not only was it you know, almost the ultimate bow out of the championship, just to take the final win, but it also clinched the Rookie of the Year title for me.
Very good. And can you please tell myself and our listeners who your teammate was that you were fighting for the win?
Eric Yanis, and he is from Czech Republic, so obviously it made sense that he was on the Czech team.
Good. Okay, tracks. You raced at Spa and Imola, both places I love. I've been to Imola, but not to Spa. Can you talk a little bit about these fabulous places, please?
Well, Spa is definitely, it is by far my favorite track. It's one of those tracks where really no matter what car you're in or even how the car is performing, you always feel like you can push the car and yourself that extra little bit, and finding the ultimate lap there is very difficult. And it's just, it's a place where you feel like you can go beyond what your normal driving capabilities are. And, you know, it's really the only track that I've been able to feel like that, and just have the sheer confidence while I'm driving a race car. And then Imola is just, I mean, it's fantastic. It's very aggressive. You have to be your car has to be very good over the curbs. And you have to be not afraid to trust the car in some high-speed corners. And, you know, with that makes a great track, all in all. It's a very good place to have a race, and I definitely would have to say that Spa and Imola and Poe were my three favorite tracks this year.
And what's the feeling like going into Eau Rouge?
No, it's quite simple, really. I mean, I guess because I was not in a very quick car comparatively, it was nothing that special. You know, the first lap out, you're flat. So in that regard, it's not anything amazing, but being able to drive at Eau Rouge and say that you've gone through Eau Rouge and be able to say that you are flat through Eau Rouge is very cool in and of itself, just because of the history that surrounds that corner.
Sure. In terms of competition, what was your impression of the drivers you were racing against? Any names we should watch out apart from yours?
You know, Fabio Laimer did a fantastic job in Master all year long. He really dominated the championship, and he fully deserved the title, and he's doing a good job in GP2 as well. Him and I were teammates in Abu Dhabi with Ocean Racing Technology, and you know, he was a very good teammate to have. We pushed each other constantly on and off track, and you know, it became very clear to me that he's quite a quick driver. There's no denying that. And then other than that, Joseph Kroll, who's also done quite well in GP2 up until this point. So those are the two names that definitely stick out.
Now, Fabio Laimer was in the news. I think today was announced he has signed up with Ocean Racing for GP2 main series. He was in his second year in Formula Master. Do you think if you were also in second year of Formula Master and you had the experience he had, you would have the measure of him?
Yeah, I mean, obviously being a second year driver is always, you know, an advantage, because you know the cars, you know the tracks, and most likely you know the team that you're driving with. So definitely, if it was our second year, I think that we could have put up a bigger fight, absolutely.
Alexander, let me ask you this. It may sound like a silly question to you. A lot of people out there, myself included, you know, who have never even sat in a race car, let alone drive one. What is the, you know, when you're a driver, you have the speed. What is the, like in Formula BMW, you did 2 years. What is the biggest thing a driver gets from his first season, where he may win a few races or none, but in the second year he's very dominating, as happened with Laimer in Formula Master and with you in Formula BMW USA? What's the main thing that you learned from the first year?
Really, you just learn how to drive the car, and you feel completely comfortable in the car. So really, the second year, you don't have to think about what you're doing. It's just everything's coming, and you're able to get the maximum out of the car. It may only be a tenth more in the corner, but if it's a tenth more in each corner, that could add up to a second or 1.1 seconds. So, I mean, it's having absolute confidence in the machine you're in and not having to think about how to drive it. You just do what feels right, and, you know, normally that results in a quite good lap time. On top of that, you also have a very good technical understanding of the car and what changes work and what changes don't work. And so, I mean, during qualifying sessions, if it's only a 30-minute qualifying and you know that the car is doing XYZ, then you will know what changes will make that, and there won't be a lag time of deciding what changes to make. You can come into pit lane and say, I want this, this, and this, go out and set a quicker lap time. So I really think that that's where the main advantages come from.
Okay. You mentioned about the Abu Dhabi track. You made your GP2 Asia debut there. What was your experience of the place and the ambiance and the season finale there? If you could,
well, to be honest, the circuit itself is not my favorite. It's a little strange, the layout, but the facilities itself and the track and everything that's involved in it is truly amazing, and I've never seen anything like it in my life. It was just everyone, and it was so excited about what was going on, and it was just like a complete thrill to have a Formula One race there. And you could just feel that among everybody, among the spectators, and even among the corner workers. I mean, everyone was just jazzed to be there, and it was a very cool thing to be a part of.
Now, what is the strange about the layout?
You know, Sector 3, it's not very flowing. The first two sectors of the track start out very flowing and very quick, actually. And then Sector 3, it goes under the hotel, and it actually turns into kind of a street track. And while I don't mind that, it's kind of strange. It kind of interrupts the first three quarters of a lap, and it's kind of, you have to drive Sector 3 completely different than you would drive Sectors 1 and 2. So it's not necessarily a bad track. It definitely takes some getting used to.
Okay. Ocean Racing, you race with this team, which is owned by Thiago Monteiro, and you made waves by finishing both races in the top five. I tell you, I was watching this race on TV, and it was such a great, great feeling to see you dice there in the top five in GP2 on a Grand Prix weekend. So were you happy with the result, or were you expecting more?
I was happy with the end result, but up until Saturday, we had really, really struggled with finding an appropriate balance with the car. In the first day of testing, we were fifth quickest, and then, you know, in the second day of testing and in the practice and qualifying, we just lost our way a little bit, and we really struggled to get traction. We were having traction problems the entire time, and really we were having a hard time solving it. But what we did know was that our car on race fuel loads was very quick, and we had done quite a lot of heavy fuel testing during the pre-event test sessions, and we knew that we had a good race car under us for the race. So really, I mean, qualifying was a bitter disappointment for us, and it was very difficult to swallow. But we kept our heads down, and we pushed forward for the race, and we were able to go from 13th to 4th. Now, had we had been able to get the issue sorted out prior to the race and in qualifying, and I had been able to put a qualifying effort of top five, top six, then I definitely think we could have been on the podium. Not necessarily challenging for a win, because Vasechi and iSport were incredibly strong all weekend, but I definitely think we could have been on the podium in either race one or race two.
Good. Now, before you got to Abu Dhabi, how many testing days you had in a GP2 car and where?
Well, there was 2 days that I had in the GP2 main series car in Jerez, Spain. And then there was 2 days at Abu Dhabi prior to the race weekend in the GP2 Asia car. So 4 days in total.
And are you planning to complete the full season of GP2 Asia, and what is the goal?
Yes, I am planning on completing the remainder of GP2 Asia. And, you know, the goal is to definitely finish in the top three. We are, I believe, fifth in points, 2 points out of second or 3 points out of second. So we are quite close points-wise. So, I mean, I think if we can just put in better qualifying performances, then we'll consistently be on the podium. And, you know, obviously the goal is to be fighting for wins. So once we get a podium, we're definitely not going to stop there.
Well, we wish you smooth sailing with Ocean Racing.
Yes, thank you. It should be a good remainder to the season.
And can you, for our fan listeners, compare the performance and characteristics of this car, GP2, with the Formula Atlantic, which you have tested, and also Formula Master Machinery, please?
The GP2 car is in a class of its own, for sure. It's much quicker than an Atlantic or a Master car, and it should be. It has double the horsepower. And really what's very difficult about the GP2 car is the Bridgestone tires, and really you only have one or two laps to get the maximum out of a new set of tires. And after that, you know, the peak of the tire is gone, and you'll lose 5 or 6 tenths off your optimum lap time. So that definitely takes some getting used to. But then, you know, the driving style compared to a Master car is identical. You drive a GP2 car the exact same as you would drive a Master car. And really, I couldn't be happier that I competed in Formula Master this year, because it prepared me so well for GP2. And looking back, the Formula Master car is essentially a mini GP2 car. It has all the same design features, just on a smaller scale.
Now, you already mentioned that your test with BMW Sauber Formula One car was reward for winning the Formula BMW World Finals in Mexico City last year. What was the first thing that impressed you most about a Formula One car when you left the pits at Jerez?
It was the fact that you could feel that every single part was meticulously made, and everything was working together seamlessly. Jerez is pretty standard to be a fairly bumpy track. And when I exited pit lane for the first time, it felt as though I was driving on glass. The power, the way the car moved, the way the car turned and broke, it was just completely smooth, and everything made sense. And everything worked harmoniously together, and that was what really impressed me.
That's good. And how many laps did you do?
82.
Is that what was planned, or did they shortchange you?
No, we had actually planned 69 laps, and we moved through the testing program a lot quicker than expected, so we were able to get in an extra 13 laps.
In terms of communication and feedback and, you know, talking to the F1 crew, is it pretty much the same as other series, or is this a totally different level every which way?
No, it's exactly the same. The only difference is you have more people to debrief to. Not only do you have the main engineer, but then you have a data engineer, an aerodynamicist, an engine engineer, a gearbox engineer, an electronics engineer, a tire engineer. So, I mean, there's just more engineers that you need to talk to. But other than that, I mean, you're explaining the same things that you would be explaining in a Formula Master or Formula BMW or GP2 car. It's still a race car with four wheels and an engine, you know.
Was Dr. Mario Tyson there?
He was not.
Okay. Now, is there a major difference between driving an F1 car compared to a GP2 machine?
You know, there is. The power and braking potential of the Formula One car is not that much different than that of a GP2 car. First big thing that came out in my mind was the lateral grip of the Formula One car is just astounding. The amount of speed that you can carry through a corner is it's mind-blowing, really, and the fact that the car doesn't move and it's always stuck there. And then, actually, the Formula One car is easier physically to drive than the GP2 car because the F1 car has power steering, whereas the GP2 car does not. So the GP2 car is actually a much more physical, much more aggressive style of driving that you need to get it quick, whereas the Formula One car, everything is extremely butter smooth and precise.
Wow. Now, physical preparation, how much did you change your normal physical training to prepare yourself for GP2 and F1 driving duties?
Well, I went from about 3 hours a day to 7 hours a day.
Wow.
And from 4 days a week to 6 days a week. So.
So that's very impressive. And is this what you're planning to be your normal routine moving forward?
Yes, absolutely.
Very good. Now, this question is very important. If you had Argentine or Bolivian nationality and Peter Windsor offered you a seat for only 10 million pesos, will you take it and be in Formula One next season?
Well, first off, I need to know what the equivalent of 10 million pesos is in U.S. dollars. Do you have that for me?
10 million pesos in U.S. dollars?
Yes.
Probably $2,000. No, it depends on it depends on which country's pesos. But it will definitely be less than what Jose Maria Lopez is bringing, which is $10 million.
Right, yeah. I mean, for sure. It's always you need to look at the overall cost and, you know, how much sponsorship you have in the first place. But, you know, any Formula One opportunity you need to look at very seriously and think long and hard before you're going to turn it down. So, I mean, yeah, if I got an offer, I would 99% take it for sure.
Oh, so you'll jump into Formula One next season?
Well, I'm not saying that. I mean, I haven't got the offer yet, so
yeah.
We will see. But it's obviously you don't know how many chances you're going to get to break into the Formula One world, and you know you'd be killing yourself 3 years down the road if you took a different route and you never got the offer again. So I mean, it's Formula One, and it's something that if you get the opportunity, whether you know for sure how it's going to turn out or not, I'm a firm believer that you need to take it.
Okay, so you grab it and gamble it. Yeah,
yeah.
Okay. Money makes the world and racing cars go around. Would you like to mention some companies who are helping you in your racing endeavors in Europe?
Well, I mean, first off, there's my parents. And while they haven't been able to personally fund my motorsports career since 2006, they have been in charge of finding sponsorship and, you know, really working on the marketing and media, and they have done an absolutely astounding job. And I'd be not even close to where I am today if it hadn't been for them. And then on top of that, there's one company, CSNA. It's a design company out of New York who's been with me now for about a year and a half. And not only is he a primary sponsor, but he takes a lot of time to help us with marketing and finding more investors and more partners to continue racing in the next year. So definitely with his help and his company's help, as well as my parents, you know, it's made this season and it looks like next season possible.
Okay, well, I tell you what, if you send us your sponsors like a link or some like a logo, we will be very happy to put it on F1 Weekly webpage. Because we appreciate people who are helping you.
Yes, perfect. Thank you.
And we are host of the show gives out $0 checks, which is not going to help you. So I won't mail you any of those.
Yeah.
Okay, talking of Europe, every few hundred miles you cross into a new country and culture. What cities do you like most apart from the racing scene?
Oh, that's a difficult question because, to be honest, I have been to quite a few different cities and different countries, but really, I mean, it's all been for racing, and I haven't really had a time to experience that specific culture and that way of life. But, you know, just from an outsider looking in, I mean, I'm fascinated with Prague. You know, it's a very cool city. It's quite different, but to be honest, as cultures go, I couldn't give an accurate opinion.
Okay, so you like Prague. That's good. Okay, U.S. media coverage. Do you feel your efforts and success in Europe are being appreciated and reported by mainstream U.S. racing media?
You know, it's, to be honest, no. I mean, there is a fairly good explanation for it, and it's that there's no American driver in Formula One, and B, there's no American Grand Prix. So really, the American motorsports media isn't going to follow a driver with aspirations to Formula One when there really is no draw to Formula One in America. When I say that, I mean compared to NASCAR or IndyCar. So, I mean, I don't feel that there is enough coverage of not only myself, but of any young American in the European ranks, or even I don't feel there's enough coverage of Formula One in the first place. But I don't think that'll change until we have a U.S. Grand Prix. Now, with that being said, I definitely think that having an American team on the grid next year will definitely, draw some Americans into the sport, and with that will come more media coverage.
Yeah, and some from Argentina also.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, what is Alexander's agenda? What is your plan for 2000 season? What you can tell us at this time, please?
Well, we're definitely going to be finishing out the GP2 Asia season. And then from there, we really haven't made our mind. I'm either going to be competing in GP2 Main Series or World Series by Renault. So it's going to be one or the other, and we should have a decision made by either the end of this year or very early in January.
Have you done any testing in a World Series by Renault car?
I have not.
Okay. Any idea how that car compares to, or maybe you can just tell our listeners what the main differences are between the two cars, GP2 and World Series by Renault car?
They're actually very similar cars. They're both quite quick. They're both very quick. The main difference is the GP2 car has more horsepower. That's where the difference in lap times really comes down to. There's a small difference in aero balance. The World Series car has a little less, but at the same time, it has better mechanical grip from the Michelin tires versus the Bridgestone tires. All in all, the World Series car is about a second and a half to 2 seconds slower than GP2 car.
Okay. Now, the Bernie and his cronies run F1 and GP2, and now they have come out with GP3. Any reason, if I may ask, you're not looking at GP3 or F3 Euro Series?
To be honest, the budgets are too high, in my opinion, for what you get in GP3. GP3, it's going to be a very small amount of track time, and it is the same budget as Formula 3. Now, it is a very attractive series because it is going to be running all the events with Formula 1, but at the same time, it's also a first-year series, so it's kind of a gamble to be involved in the first-year series, because even if you're with what you think is going to be the best team, they could end up not being the best team. So it's difficult to see myself there being as though it's a first-year series.
Okay, so you're definitely, if all goes well to plan, you will be racing in Europe.
Absolutely.
I tell you what, Alexander, it's on the record. Moi is coming to one of your races.
Awesome. Look forward to it.
Okay, me too. Okay, finally, how about a message for listeners of F1 Weekly, please?
It's the racing season is now pretty much finished. So everyone enjoy their Christmas and enjoy their break. And, I'm looking forward to a fantastic 2010. And I hope that you'll follow along with the ride.
Okay, Alexander, thank you very much. All the best in your racing career. And we shall stay in touch.
All right. I look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you, sir.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And, of course, thank you, Alexander Rossi, for joining F1Weekly.com. And now let's go right to the wrap-up with the forum updates.
The forum updates brought to us by Miguel again this week.
Yep, Miguel is an indentured servant.
Poor Miguel.
Serving his...
But he did get a promotion at work, I saw on LinkedIn.
Everybody's getting a promotion.
The forum updates. The forum is quietly humming with activity, unaffected by winter or summer. Our worldwide members keep posting information, debating and exchanging opinions, sharing ideas, or just funny stuff. It's the season to be jolly in the Northern Hemisphere, and we certainly have a very merry forum. The countryside thread is still growing. 4,325 posts at last count, and the baked beans thread discussion is going full throttle. Or should we say, going at full gas. Major topics of discussion are centered around the preparations for the 2010 season and the driver lineups, both announced or speculated. Here are some of the examples of topics covered. The possibility of Michael returning to Formula 1, Kimi's move to WRC, Braun's takeover of Mercedes, and F1 drivers pick Senna as the top F1 driver of all time. Parrothead created a poll. Who will have the most wins in 2010? Currently, Alonso and Hamilton are tied in the lead, each with 33% of the votes. Listeners should visit the forum and vote. Remember, you should not let others decide for you. And if you don't vote, then you can't complain. And as the update was about to be dispatched, two new threads hit the forum like bombshells. Richard Branson and Tony Fernandez go cross-dressing. Will Renault be selling its team on Wednesday? And as we know, they did not. Listen to the show. Visit the forums. Don't forget the Yahoo ads. You'll live longer, be happier, and have lower blood pressure. Disclaimer, F1 Weekly, its stockholders, hosts, employees, and affiliates decline any responsibility or liability for on matters pertaining to the content of the forum updates or to the statements or opinions therein included.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Stephen. Quickly, calendars are going fast. Get them now. They're beautiful. They're the best. And that's all you can say. And AutoCourse is not as good and more expensive. That's my personal opinion, of course. Marine Karting is proud to organize and support the 2010 Jim Russell Northern California Rotax Series. Marine Karting offers CRG carts, engines, parts for all carts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California carters. For more information, go to marinekarting.com. I want to mention MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter. Do a search for F1 Weekly and make us a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@f1weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who listens to the program. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, recording and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.